Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 23 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watsika, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana, Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and special guest Bill Lapp of AES from Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Well, let's start by getting a list of topics to cover from our analyst. We'll begin with you, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watsika.
Oh, I thought we could touch on the quarterly stocks. I think we've just about beat the acreage thing to death. The other thing is how that affects long-term prices.
Okay, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, I think we have to take a little bit of a look and see, what Congress is getting done. We seem to have slowed down this last week with the idea that the stock market set back with not feeling that maybe these bills can get pushed through in a timely manner like they were thinking. So maybe what Congress is up to.
Mike Zuzulo.
I think since especially Wayne and I were on the corn panel together, we ought to talk about maybe where we stand since the Beef House meeting, Todd, and maybe drill that into whether it's too late for producers to hedge, because that seems to be a major topic on producers' minds on my phone right now.
And Bill Lapp of AES.
Well, I think it'd be good to talk a little bit about trade and whether we ought to fear the big bad wolf or not, and some issues going on with obviously Brazilian beef and the avian flu here in the U.S., as well as was mentioned, we need to talk about those corn stock or stocks report on March 31.
This is in your bailiwick. Let's start right there with trade and some of the meats. Tell me about what's been happening with JBS in Brazil, the impact it has had on trade overseas, and what you see for the United States out of it.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think it's real clear how that's going to transpire, but Brazil has been accused of not following all the rules for trade and in terms of inspection, and I'm not fully understanding of all the accusations there, but there have already been several countries that are suggesting they won't want to take Brazilian beef. The U.S. is starting to talk about placing some restrictions, and we already have significant restrictions on those, and I think that's those are fully justified. I think there's few countries around the world that are restricting U.S. imports of our chicken because of the several avian flu incidences we've had this month. And I think that we're always thinking about what might happen if we got into some sort of trade war. And it's been a lot more rhetoric than reality to this point, and hopefully that will continue. It's so absolutely critical for U.S. agriculture, and I'll spout off a few statistics on just China and soybeans. I mean, they take the equivalent of about 66 million acres worth of soybeans in 1 month. They import the equivalent of the entire crop of the state of Missouri in 1 month, there are 140 vessels hitting their shores every month. So we've seen it in 2004 where we had about a $2 or $3 collapse in the price of soybeans when they stopped taking soybeans from the world. That's what really is on my mind, is maybe a long shot, but certainly very impactful event if it occurs.
And just for some clarification, they do take $66 million, I'll use your number, in a year, acres worth of soybeans. The United States will, if USDA's numbers to this point, and these will be changed next Friday on the 31st when the prospective plantings report comes out, put 88 million acres of soybeans in the ground. So China, one country, is taking 66 million acres worth of soybeans from the whole world. I think about half of those or thereabouts come out of the United States. And your fear is that if we get into some kind of trade war, that this could create a problem, and a big problem, because there's really only one huge importer of soybeans on the planet. And if we were to get into kind of a trade war with them, that would be problematic. The other thing you mentioned, Bill, were the livestock problems, one of them out of Brazil, where JBS has been accused of allowing some tainted meat, rotten meat, to be able to export it out of their country, mostly to Europe, I believe. And here in the United States, that there have been some avian flu or bird flu outbreaks in flocks in Tennessee, Kentucky area, in that part of the world. So those are all kinds of things that we're looking at this point. And Wayne Nelson kind of playing into that. You're a little concerned that things are slowing down with the Trump administration in its ability to move legislation through Congress, of course, today, which is Thursday, the 23rd. They're working on the health bill at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, 4:15 in the Eastern Time Zone. Still don't have the votes, apparently, to get things done. If they begin to bog down with this kind of legislation, how much of a problem does that create for the marketplace in general? And how has the Dow and other markets reacted?
Well, you know, we've seen this last week that the Dow has reacted a little negatively towards that. We've seen the S&Ps drop. We've watched some of the investments pulled out. We watched corn go from a fund long to a fund short. And I think that basically, as we relax some of the enthusiasm or Trumpflation ideas, we see that the fund money is not as anxious to hop in the longs in the grain market. And that's what's been our rally. And until we can see a weather problem, looks like we're going to continue to see this little erosion until we can see that we can move forward with some positive sort of legislation.
Mike Suslow, can you recap for me what you think the Corn Panel folks told the people at the Beef House, maybe you and others, a couple of weeks ago on the 7th day of March, and how things maybe have changed since then?
Yeah, I think, you know, Wayne had a very good outlook from a standpoint of short-term negativity because of supply-demand. I think I was probably the most friendly from a standpoint of wheat not being a negative feature to the market like it has been the last 3 to 4 years. And I think Dan was talking a lot about the cycles from a standpoint of the rally coming in the second half of the calendar year for the corn, cyclically speaking, and that matched up with my dollar analysis. And I think we both were of the view that the dollar was going to sink and not go higher in the medium term. So that's kind of what I remember, and maybe Wayne can add to it if he remembers anything extra other than that.
Is that about right, Wayne?
That sounds like a real good, concise explanation of what we said.
Hey, Bill Lapp, can you look forward into next week's reports for me and start with what you think the impact might be from the grain stocks numbers?
I think you could influence a couple things by the stocks report. Number one, you could, if it's small enough or large enough, we could say, geez, we missed that crop at the start, either overstated or understated, more likely overstated the 2016 soybean crop. And the corn will certainly influence the feed and residual. USDA will use this opportunity in their April supply demand to adjust the residual number there. In terms of the acreage, I think... number one, I think the universe of corn and soybeans will shrink just because returns are down, and I'm hearing that it maybe in the more marginal areas you'll see more of that. If you look at 2011 through 2016, a place like Colorado actually lost corn and soybean acres to wheat, and I wouldn't doubt that we see a little bit more of that in the marginal fringes, I should say, of the Corn Belt. So I've got 90 million corn and 88 million soybeans, and I'm not sure whether I like being the same as the USDA or not. I've had it for some time. But if you look at, and I think this is kind of the way some of the farmers out here look, you look at the return and the opportunity on soybeans, I think this is a year you're willing to take more of a chance. So maybe there's upside that you get to 89 million acres soybeans. I'm not sure. That seems like a stretch to have such a big jump of more than 4.5 million acres, and to drop corn acres from 94 million a year ago to 90 million acres is a big drop. So we're talking some big dynamics year over year when, especially in the, I'll just say in the Western Corn Belt, agronomic considerations typically take priority. You want to have a stay in rotation if that's typical, or plan around your equipment. And I think that'll be, continue. On the wheat, I 46 million acres USDA is suggesting, and we have the winter wheat acreage. That's probably about right. That's the lowest since 1909, and wheat does not have GMO in its favor, and corn and soybeans do. So we're probably going to continue to see that. The only other thing I'll say, and then I'd like to hear the comments of the others, is I think we're going to go. I mean, if you look at the growth in demand in the world for protein meal and for veg oils, it's running 3 to 4%. So we're going to have to add more soybean acres in the world every year, and it's been running about 2 million acres a year. So I think the market's going to continue to encourage more. And when we as analysts look at the supply demand and say, well, that justifies a sub $10 soybean market, and then we watch it not trade under $10, at least not very long, we shouldn't be surprised, because there's an underpinning of demand that's really significant in the bean market.
I have a quick follow-up question for you, and then maybe Mike Zuzulo, you can continue on with his thoughts here. If we're looking to add acreage in your mind of 2% annually, have we done that already out of Brazil for this growing season?
Argentina is down about 2.5%, and Brazil's up 2%. You're correct. So we have added it this year. But I think that in the U.S., it's simply economics between corn and soybeans are favored. And corn doesn't have the fundamental support that when prices get at a certain point, you seem to have underlying demand either from domestic U.S. soybean meal users, veg oil users, or from China buying soybeans. And that continues to be the case. I know that's a big increase in soybean acreage, but unless you're going to shrink the pie between corn and soybeans, I think that's what the economics certainly are telling producers to do.
The total acreage number is the other thing that I'll be looking at, other than that corn number, because of our demand pace that Merrill brought up. But, you know, USDA is at 3.5 million less than last year. I'm not that low. I'm closer to 252 for the 8 principal crops, just to be safe. I think USDA could be right because of the financial stress that we've been taking on. And, you know, what's surprised me, again, since the beginning of March and since the crop insurance price was set for the base at such a high level in soybeans, was that we've still tried to buy bean acres at the Board of Trade. I mean, we've come off a 2.61 bean corn ratio this week, and it's been, you know, climbing for the better part of the month of March. And I think that's real intriguing to me. And the other thing that I think is real important to the stocks number, Todd, will probably be the fact that now we are back to a carrying charge market in the old crop, new crop bean spread. The May beans are now below November beans. After Thursday's close, that is a return to a carrying charge, suggesting that we're building supplies. Can we reverse that? I hope we can, because I think it'd be one of the best things for the bean market. But I think it'll take probably a friendly stocks report to get the market to come off of, well, we've got more and more beans coming out of South America.
Hey, Wayne, do you have an idea where you think all these bean acres are going to come from?
I think they're going to come from the financial district. And I say that out of the idea that it's going to be the bankers that are not going to give money to a number of farmers out there is why they're going to plant more beans. They can put out an acre of beans cheaper. And we're hearing more and more people say, as they go to talk to their bankers, that not necessarily our customers, but their bankers are saying there's a group of people that haven't been in and talked to them that they probably better get in there because they haven't repaid all their operating capital from last year, and they're not going to give money to put out corn. So I think that's where we can pick up some acres.
So you're talking simply about across the whole of the growing region then?
A little bit everywhere. I mean, you know, not so much in Illinois and Indiana, but some of the bankers, some of the ones that we're talking about are here in Indiana. Ours in Illinois. And, you know, so I do think that that's going to add a few more acres, you know, and as we talk to seed corn or seed dealers, I'll tell you what they've told me. At first it was just we were selling a lot more beans than usual, but a lot of them have booked both. And because they want to have the quality bean seed if they want it, and they want to have the quality corn seed if they decide to plant corn. So we're not sure, but they have booked more beans than usual this year.
Merle Crowley, do you have any additional comments on this one?
Just mainly price in general. We were talking about maybe support or where things might come up. When Mike was talking about whether he was bullish or bearish the commodities at Covington. And in corn, I'm looking at support at 350 May and 375 Dece now. May closed at 356.5 and Dece at 79.5. So I'm starting to think about getting something long on the corn, and then you would almost have to hope that the stocks and the acreage would be bullish for that. Now, if I did go long there, I wouldn't want to risk much below, I would probably go long at least July, and I wouldn't want to risk much below 355 on that. And if I went long on the Dece, I'd probably want to not risk it below 365 on any kind of trade there. On the beans, boy, that's questionable. You know, corn has seen the pressure come from the extra acres and bushels that we're thinking, and we had that report on Monday, and the corn has just kind of collapsed and fallen through the swing supports. And the beans today just did the same thing. We had a low in May and a sideways range that went from 92 to 94 on the low side, and we broke that today. Now, whether we can trade on lower, I'm not sure, but it just seems to me that we're looking at all this, and it almost seems like there's two sides to it, where we got the guys who's got a lot of corn on hand. Well, I sure hope these corn acres are less so the corn price goes up. And then maybe the guys on the bean side are saying, well, I got some beans left over, so I'm hoping we have less bean acres, and you're not going to have both. It's one of those cases where, and I mentioned this before at one of our meetings, if you listen to these fund advisors, they talk about being right 30 to 40% of the time and being able to bring about decent returns. So it's the risk management is how they get just being right those short periods of time and get that to work for them. And, you know, you can buy a put right now in May soybeans. If you want a $10 put, it's 24 and a quarter. If you want a 990, it's 18 and three quarters. And I'm not saying get into that and waste all that money. I'm saying that would help you sleep at night in case the bottom does drop out. You know, we've got some acreage that haven't been accounted for, and I think that's normal when we have low prices. But what if all those acres went into the corn and the bean acres stay where they're at or maybe even increase a little bit? This report could be bearish for both commodities. And I just think that sometimes we come into a report that has a tendency to change market direction for at least 30 days and sometimes as much as 90 days, that you would have some sort of downside protection in place going into this. And when I look over the whole picture, if we don't have something weather-wise or this inflation kicks in, I don't see where the upside is coming from, and yet I've been saying all along that I see corn higher and beans higher based on the fundamentals. I mean, on the technicals, but I'll be darned if I can find a fundamental at this time that really tells me that they're going higher.
Hey, Wayne Nelson, can you talk to me just a little bit about the crop insurance process? where we put those final numbers for this year and what that means to producers as they make some final decisions going into the planting season.
Well, of course, the beans were over $10, and the corn was up over $1 from last year, and the corn was up 10 cents from last year. And basically, as we look at it, the beans figure a profit, and the corn, if it we actually get there, and on most yields, it figures break even. So that is leaning towards ensuring a better crop or a better profit for most farmers by using the crop insurance on the beans, as far as that. That's where I said that from the financial district that we could maybe see the banks pushing more. You know, it's going to be awfully hard to say that crop insurance is going to be the real big backstop for corn. With, you know, it was a decent number this year, I think 396. And, you know, as we look at it, that's not a bad number, but it's also going to be awfully hard to say that I can pay all my expenses if I just collect crop insurance.
Bill Lapp, when you think about what's happening in Iowa and Nebraska and the Dakotas, maybe parts of Kansas, how much of a role does crop insurance play for producers in their decision-making process this season for their crop rotation?
Oh, I think it's significant, and it varies from farmer to farmer, but it certainly plays a role. The idea of a financial decision being compelled upon them is true for a lot of producers. I mean, we've had lower prices. This is going on the fourth year, I guess, now, and there's not forced sales going on that I know of in the country, but there is a different attitude about cash flow and risk management than there was when we had $5 plus corn, certainly. So I think we're getting more and more into the mindset of those producers that may not be the lowest cost or may have extended themselves too much are going to be more dependent on managing their risks through the insurance program. And I you know, it's certainly justified, and the bankers are going to compel them to, I think.
Let me give you some numbers from the February crop insurance figures from 2012 on. I think these will be a little enlightening for you. In 2012, the projected price for corn was $5.68. $5.65 in 2013, $4.62 in 2014, $4.15 in 2015, $3.86 last year, and a dime higher this year at $3.96. So that's a pretty good spread, $3.96 or $3.86 on the bottom last year and $5.68 on the top in 2012 for corn. Given that, the harvest price was $7.50 in 2012. $4.39, $3.49, $3.82, and $3.49 were the other harvest price numbers. Here's the spread for soybeans. $12.55 in 2012, $12.87 in 13, $11.36 in 14, $9.74 in 15, $8.85 last year, and $10.19 this year. So it appears to me that that spread from top to bottom for soybeans, and I'd have to do the numbers, but if you think about it, really does favor soybeans over this last 5 to 6 year period. In Illinois, I know soybeans have been a farmer favorite, and by that I mean they've planted more soybeans from 2011 to 2016. Illinois has done that. Other states have not. So there may be some ability for producers potentially in the northern part of Illinois to move to a more 50-50 like rotation for soybeans. Certainly other states, I would think Iowa, Minnesota, parts of Nebraska maybe could put more soybeans in the ground, and it'll be interesting to see how all of that plays out. But there's, I guess, Mike Zuzulo, in that history there, a reason for producers to move to soybeans. And in that process, they've also eliminated a lot of wheat acres, but we still have a tremendous carryover in the United States and on the world front for wheat. Why is that the case?
Well, I think it's because we didn't have trade policies that were beneficial to our allies in the Middle East. If I had to jump into the political sphere and leave the analytical economic sphere for a couple seconds, it would be because we did not get the first bid out there. And at the same time, some of our political and financial decisions made after the financial crisis kept this market in a currency war across the globe, which meant kept the dollar stronger than everything else out there. And so to me, it was a two-edged sword that really was the death knell for our wheat export market, Todd. Quality issues, you can talk about those. You know, there's some of that out there in the last few years. But I think those are the two primary things that I think, quite frankly, are changing in our global outlook for wheat trade. And, you know, when you were talking about those prices and those spreads, I started writing, okay, what happened these past few years that would explain that? I think, well, U.S. fertilizer prices have gone up and up since the 12 drought. They really were slow to come down. U.S. yields seem to be going up better for beans with some of these newer genetics, and producers have more confidence than I've seen in probably 5 or 6 years to go after more bean acres because of what they've seen the last couple of years in Illinois, in Indiana, in Nebraska, in eastern Kansas. And then obviously South America's crop problems, as someone else was talking about earlier in the show. So you add those three things together with the 2017 finances here in the United States, it makes sense. So
this is Bill. I'm going to agree with him that it's been a number of factors like that. But in terms of wheat, we are the fifth largest producer in the world. So when there's a, we are the world is much more dependent on other people's wheat than in the U.S. So it's more of a, turns out to be more of a residual crop. For us, we're more focused on corn and soybean production, and we've to some degree forfeited that production of wheat to other places in the world.
Help me out. Did I see something this week where Russia, through the Black Sea, has decided that it did not want to export as much wheat to the Mideast?
Yes, and they cut their 17 crops, similar to what a Bears did in Australia back during the Beef House meeting. The SovEcon came out on Thursday and cut their crop 15% from last year, so that's true.
Will that have an impact anywhere along the lines?
It should have already, in my opinion. I think this is where I've got a couple big black eyes from the wheat trade, and I've been nursing them for the past couple years. I'm hoping that eventually the swelling will go down.
Well,
yes, fundamentally.
Well, I read that, but there was no reaction at all in Chicago, and I thought that was a little odd.
Well, you're seeing a better Argentine. You got the Argentine crop bigger. You're looking at EU being bigger and Australia's crop being bigger, and I think that's going to offset any reductions that Russia may have.
I'm kind of with Mike on this, that we've had four straight record wheat crops in the world. This year's, I think, could be significantly lower. If you don't even take yields down because of any dryness in the southern plains, the hard wheat crop this year is going to be off by one third from a year ago. I mean, we're going to have a drop in acreage and a drop in yields. Wheat will not be the burden on the corn market that it was a year ago, in my opinion.
Anybody got ideas of what the RFS will do for soybeans in the United States?
Well, I think that number one, as far as the U.S. is concerned, it's going to do more on whether they change the ruling on how, if they have the blender's credit for the soy diesel, and they put that to, we'd be using our bean oil a lot more. I think that would be one of the big things as far as the soybean part of it would go. I think on the other end of the side is, you know, we want to keep up because, let's face it, without the ethanol business, our corn's a dollar cheaper. And I think we had a case about some ethanol dumping or something, or biodiesel dumping subsidized by imports from Argentina and Indonesia, that they're trying to register a dumping charge here that was put out today. But I think that along the way that we do want to keep the ethanol plant and the RFS staying strong here. We don't necessarily have to increase the usage a lot, but boy, an E15 sure wouldn't hurt things.
You know, February 28th was an interesting day, and to see the kind of reaction we had in such a short time, 5 or 6% increase in corn and soy oil prices, and then we dumped the market when the White House denied called it fake news or whatever. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to do anything with regard to the obligated party changing that anytime soon. It doesn't seem anyway. The biodiesel is a tricky one because it has to be with some tax legislation that you have to change the rules. And it looks like we're not going to get health care voted on today. That's going to be slowed up. And so if we slow up health care, that slows up the resolution of tax bills. So we might not have a decision on whether we have a tax credit for 2017 until the end of 2017. And it's still unclear whether it's going to be a blender credit, which would be kind of back to status quo, or a producer credit, which would eliminate about a third of the, or it would disadvantage about a third of the biodiesel that we supplied last year that was imported.
Let's wrap this up just a bit. I think maybe what I'd like to do is to know, first off, from each of you, if you're mostly in a holding pattern, waiting for the March 31 reports, and I'll just pull you across the board. Bill Lapp, mostly in a holding pattern, or do you have strong thoughts on the markets?
Of course, I work with end users, and you know, I've had been burned a little bit here by the wheat market too, because I've suggested people get into this market on this downtrend. I think it's a vacuum, a news vacuum we've had really for 60 days. But I think that we're the next significant move will be up in these markets. I've got tighter carryouts, I think, than the USDA, and I think that just like last year, we had a chance. End users had a chance to buy at relatively cheap values. Farmers had a chance to take advantage of a big increase in the market, and market analysts had a chance to prove they're worth their salt by telling them to do so.
Mike Zuzulo?
Holding pattern on wheat and corn, will not hold on the beans, Todd, if we lose support. I will recommend more 17 soybean hedges with a May $10 put. So be careful, because it's not a bona fide hedge. That's a nearby put against a new crop hedge. But I'm looking at this carrying charge, and if we take out 320 in the meal and 983 in the beans, November beans technically have a swing down to 935, 940. And I'd like to capture as much as that as I can in the May. If clients want to stick with a bona fide hedge and do some November bean hedges, I'll be happy to discuss that too.
And any final word from you, Mike?
Yes, I would say that we keep the sideways pattern in the dollar. I would say our demand for U.S. grains is still on track for being better than USDA expects, and that's the whole heart and soul of their baseline projections.
Bill Lapp, I'll come back to you for a final word at the end of this, but let's see. Holding pattern, Wayne Nelson, and final word.
Yeah, I think we're at a place in our hedging that we're going to stay on the sidelines for now. We're going to keep our hedges in place and look to see how we can react here. We hope and we look, and there's always a weather scare sometime through the planning or summertime that way. And we do want to be ready to do some pricing on the next rally to increase our hedges.
And Merrill Crowley?
I recommended buying puts in the beans about 2-3 weeks ago, and I used the May to do so. It was just fairly inexpensive, and you know, it would get us through the crop report. If anything, I think, in my opinion, is going to be bullish, I would say it might be the corn acres from the report. After that, we're going to have to watch the weather. But I like the idea of trying to take a stab at the long side in the corn at these levels. We're maybe five cents below where we're at now.
And finally, Bill Lapp from AES out of Omaha, Nebraska. Any final word from you?
The one thing I think I've heard everybody talk a little bit about today is the uncertainty, and with a new administration and new policy, there's greater uncertainty. So I think that the environment lends itself to taking less chances and trying to find ways, better ways to manage your risk as you go through the remainder of 2017.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'd like to thank our panelists today, including Bill Lapp from AES out of Omaha, Nebraska, Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois. You can always listen to Commodity Week, any of our other programming, too, online at willag.org. WILLAG.ORG on demand anytime you'd like. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.